pierced theory jocks, undergraduate refugees from the UC Santa Cruz History of Consciousness program, and hairy-palmed hangers-on. I'll leave it to you to determine which psychodemographic niche you fall into. I'd like to begin with some scriptural quotations from Saint Foucault, which seems particularly apposite to me, given that we are in a pleasure dungeon here. And Michel was a man who loved this city's pleasure dungeons, unhappily loved them too much, since he was one of the virus's first celebrity martyrs. Why are we here? I want you to cast your minds back to the History of Sexuality, Volume 1, a dim, repressed memory from your undergraduate years, I suspect, at this point, and recall Foucault's arguments against the kind of a priori assumption that sexuality in America is repressed, that it is the repressed. And we know the drill. We've all sort of heard the litany about the Judeo-Christian tradition and how it casts a long shadow over the American psyche. And many of our kind of national pathologies are attributable, arguably, to the repression of sexuality. Foucault, in that book, if you remember, isn't having any of it. He says, if sex is repressed, that is, condemned to prohibition, non-existence, and silence, then the mere fact that one is speaking about it has the appearance of a deliberate transgression. And I would argue that that's actually what draws a number of speakers to sexuality conferences. We are what Foucault calls the speaker's benefit, which is sort of crack rock for the soul if you're a lecturer. We are conscious of defying established power. Our tone of voice shows that we know we are being subversive, and we ardently conjure away the present and appeal to the future, whose day will be hastened by the contribution we believe we are making. But Foucault warns that this is exactly, precisely what power wants, to transform sex into discourse, to run carnal pleasures, as he puts it, through the mill, a sort of a discursive mill. Since the 18th century, he argued, sex in Western culture has been, quote, driven out of hiding and forced to lead a discursive existence. Surely no other society has ever accumulated, this is him talking, in such a relatively short span of time, a similar quantity of discourses concerned with sex. And he's talking here about the medicalization of sex, the pathologization of sex, sex as an object of knowledge, as a cynosure of the institutional gaze. And he goes on to say, it is possible that where sex is concerned, the most long-winded, the most impatient of societies is ours. I can't resist adding as a parenthetical that I will promise not to be terribly long-winded on the subject if you promise not to be terribly impatient. Fast forward to the 21st century, our historical moment. There are a few things I'd like you to roll around in your minds. As I talk, I'm actually not doing the promised lecture, which is very like me to pull a hairpin turn with squealing radials at the last moment. I have the attention span of a gnat, and my mind wandered elsewhere. So today I'm going to be speaking on pornotopia versus the culture wars, which I think will provide hopefully a nice historical and kind of dialectical backdrop for the other speakers. So some of the questions I'd like you to sort of roll around in your mind are, is the sexual web the revenge of a repressed society, or is it, pace Foucault, that society's final triumph over our libidinous impulses, the textualization of sex, the virtualization of sex, its trial separation, and in all likelihood irreconcilable divorce, from a body that is increasingly irrelevant in our matrix world, where life is lived more and more on the other side of the screen? Does the fetishism that seems to be proliferating online bear witness to the liberation of the erotic unconscious, or is it merely more evidence of the obsolescence of mass culture, the shriveling up of the public sphere, the atomization of the mainstream into a million micro-niche demographics who are not only bowling alone, but bawling alone? So that's sort of by way of a preamble. I call this lecture Paradise Lust, Pornotopia Meets the Culture Wars. Now, despite the Pitchfork and Bible Brigade's crusade against gay marriage, sex ed, and that mother of harlots and abominations, the smutty soap opera Desperate Housewives, America's low-slung undercarriage is still well-lubed with salacious soaps, erotic novels, X-rated confessionals, and books of oat porn pornography calculated to steam the veneer off your coffee table. From Jenna Jameson's New York Times bestseller, How to Make Love Like a Porn Star, to story of O-flavored true confessions such as The Surrender by Tony Bentley, a foul-mouthed peon, to the joys of anal sex, sample quote, my ass is my very own back door to heaven, unquote. Porn and a mythologized Boogie Nights vision of the adult movie industry is going mainstream. A few examples of the mainstreaming of porn. Well, of course, Sex and the City kind of secured the beachhead for this sensibility, as the military likes to say, softened up the target opportunity, milking female ejaculation for laughs and plumbing the comic depths of the rim job. Particularly, one episode had Carrie say, are we talking tuckus lingus? And Miranda replied, I'm afraid so. And Carrie said, how did this happen? How did they get the message that the ass is now on the menu? Nothing says lovin' like something from the oven. Speaking of which, the visual rhetoric of adult video is now influencing even cooking shows. Many of you may have heard the term food porn. And this sort of visual grammar is evident in your face close-ups of concupiscent honeydews, the incredibly over-mic sound, quote-unquote, as Harper's writer Frederick Kaufman puts it, that tickles your ears with the clicks and the snaps and the little crunchy edges of things, and always the climactic money shot. First bite reactions to whatever the chef has cooked, you know, tornadoes, Rossini, or whatever, that are so shamelessly orgasmic they'd bring a blush to the face of Bernini's St. Teresa. And here's an example of what I'm talking about. This is a video made by an artist named Naomi, and she's collaged together a lot of the ecstatic reactions I was talking about. Okay. Okay, well, it goes on. That's by an artist named Naomi Leibovitz, and it's called Tasting Rachel Ray. I think she's punning on the Food Network slogan, which is Taste Life, which always makes me think, bizarrely enough, of the homophobic crusader Anita Bryant's comment that homosexuals are vampires because they eat life, meaning another man's sperm, which adds a whole new subtext to the Food Channel. So as I said, where was I? I'm already getting all verklempt, and it's only two pages into the proceedings. So that, as I said, was an example of what WAGs call, it's a sort of culinary softcore that WAGs call a food porn. And now that America has cornered the global market on morbid obesity, there's a certain, I think, cultural logic, you'll agree, to the sublimation of our sexual impulses into the act of stuffing our faces. The belly shirt has transformed the belly into an erogenous zone, be it ever so blubbery. And easy gourmet divas like Rachel Ray and Nigella Lawson and Giada De Laurentiis have seduced the young male demographic by toying with the Freudian subtext of the melon baller and the lubricious gooiness of chocolate frosting. For many men, fantasizing about boning Giada while she debones a chicken, abundant cleavage spilling from her tight-fitting top, is just a PG-13 version of whacking off to web porn. As Kaufman told NPR host Brooke Gladstone, you're seeing men in bars watching Giada, and they're watching Rachel next to the football game, and it's almost this kind of strange, surreal experience of having somebody cook for you while you're sitting there drinking beer alone in a bar, crunching a potato chip. It's this kind of outrageous sense of happiness and perfection given to you in this completely virtual manner. A little amuse-bouche for Barney the Lonely Barfly. The casting aside of inhibitions has been underway since the 1960s, argues the design critic Rick Pointer in his book Designing Pornotopia: Travels in Visual Culture. It was given a boost by the arrival of home video and with the coming of the World Wide Web in the 90s. The urge to strip away the final shreds of decorum has become unstoppable. In the last few years, sexual images have thrust their way into the everyday public sphere. This food porn is sort of an example of that. We're in the process of designing a pornotopia, argues Pointer, in which sex, or at least our dreams of sex, are allowed to permeate areas of life they should never have been permitted to enter until recently. Western culture, I would argue, is defining deviancy up, as in out of the underground into the mainstream, whether it's that symptomatic of the decline of the West or the opening of the public mind depends, at least in part, on which side of the culture wars you're on. Now, according to Dr. Barnaby Barrett, who's president of the American Association of Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists, the culture wars are back with a vengeance. The media are becoming more sensationalist, he argues, more titillating, even as the religious right is becoming far more conservative and puritanical sexually. So from his vantage point as an educator, sex therapist, and psychoanalyst, Barrett looks out on an America that he says is racked by what he calls a sexual civil war. Now, on the one side, you've got sex-positive straights and gays, civil libertarians, crusaders for sexual freedom, and random rutters. You know, the guy who just has to have that make-your-own dildo kit. 1,000 sold worldwide, just add water, amazing detail. And the girl who won't leave home without her ultraviolet jelly rubber butt beads. And the clammy-handed geek who actually owns one of these creepy, funny flashlights hawked on every porn site, a male masturbation aid consisting of a fleshy cyberskin orifice, discreetly concealed inside a fake flashlight. On the other side of this Kulturkampf are Christian soldiers marching as to war against frank, factual talk about sex in the classroom, school libraries, or student newspapers. According to the National Coalition Against Censorship's Sex and Censorship Committee, fundamentalist groups are clamoring for censorship of medically accurate sex information. In its place, they champion a faith-based ideology that urges America's youth to gird up its loins against Satan's temptations by forswearing masturbation, contraception, abortion, and homosexuality, and arming themselves with abstinence. Some faith-based curricula actually urge children to bring Jesus along on a hot date as a chaperone. Talk about killing the mood. If a little learning is a dangerous thing, faith-based cluelessness is suicidal. At a moment when, according to Planned Parenthood, the United States has the highest rate of teen pregnancy in the developed world. Recent studies also show that American adolescents are contracting HIV at a rate far greater than their European counterparts. Experts cite a dearth of comprehensive, factually accurate sex ed and a lack of access to contraceptive devices such as condoms as the root of such evils. Now, according to Dr. Barrett, there is more opposition to sexual expression than ever because, quote, sexual values are a flashpoint in the culture wars, unsurprisingly. America is gagged and bound by the moral values of neo-Puritans and paleo-conservatives, such as Tom Coburn, the Republican senator from Oklahoma and co-chair of the Presidential Advisory Council on HIV/AIDS, who preaches abstinence as a mighty bulwark against the virus, and who worries that lesbianism is, quote, so rampant in some of the schools in southeast Oklahoma that they'll only let one girl go to the bathroom at a time. So that's what they're doing in there. You know, every man has wondered that all his life. Why do they go to the bathroom in pairs? Now it can be told. And Coburn also believes that, quote, the gay community has infiltrated the very centers of power in every area across this country. In 1997, Coburn castigated NBC for encouraging irresponsible sexual behavior by flaunting full frontal nudity during prime time. The nudity in question? Death camp inmates in Schindler's List. I am not making this up. But mirabile dictu, wondrous to report, at the very moment that self-appointed moral czars are making schools, network TV, and Super Bowl halftime safe for theocracy, if not for democracy, the web often feels like one big petri dish, culturing mutant strains of pornography and bizarre new paraphilias. Now, by this, I don't mean it's sort of a vexed question. I don't mean that we're witnessing a runaway proliferation of alternative sexualities. The truth, I suspect, again, based on purely anecdotal